Hello, friends. Hello, Cheryl. I have something to say to you too, Cheryl. I don't know if you saw on my Facebook page, but I posted a picture of the dream catcher that Danielle made for me. It's finished. If you haven't seen it, you can go to my Facebook page. You'll have to scroll down a bit now, but you'll see the dream catcher there. It's really lovely. I know you were curious about how it looked. So yeah, go have a peek at my Facebook page. Scroll down a little till you see it. It's beautiful. It's really the most gorgeous dream catcher I've ever seen. Let's see. What else do I have to say? Well, it's been a nice weekend. Yesterday, we had a memorial service here in Pueblo for a friend of ours, Jack Hill. Jack was in our ACIM study group at the Center for Inner Peace, and he was also in our NTI study group and our Inner Ramana study group here. So he was a good friend. He had lung cancer, and he recently transitioned into joy. We talked about what Jack's, at the memorial service yesterday, we talked about what Jack's essential nature was, and that essential nature, of course, is eternal. Illusions come and go, but essential nature is eternal. And Jack's essential nature, what came to me was that it was joy. And then when I showed up at the memorial service prepared to speak and talk about that essential nature that continues forever, that we all experience, and sure enough, right by Jack's urn, somebody had put a sign that said joy. So there we go. So that's what we did yesterday. We went to Jack's memorial service. And, of course, other friends from the ACIM groups and the NTI groups were there. So, you know, we had a nice gathering after the service. And then today, we've been hiking. We went out and four-wheeling. Hiking and four-wheeling. We went out to a place here called Red Rock Canyon Park out near Canyon City. I think some of the people who came for Miracles in the Mountains may have gone out there while they were here. We went out there today. There's a road out there that just goes on and on and on and gets a little rougher the further you go. So we took that road out for about half an hour or so and then parked and did some hiking and some climbing around on rocks. And we really had a very, very nice time. I guess that's my news. That's what's up here in Pueblo, Colorado. We're here now for, I have other news. I knew there was something I wanted to talk about, but it just hadn't come to me yet. But I thought of this when I was listening to Cheryl speak. Lisa Hansen posted on my Facebook wall a 1 hour long interview with Byron Katie. And so this morning, I watched that, and I thought it was really an interesting interview, a good interview. And in fact, if you happen to go to my Facebook page, you'll notice also that I made comments underneath it, about four different comments about things I noticed in the interview. Barb is saying it was good, so she saw it. One of the things, excuse me, my voice wants to have some tea. Let me do that. Let's satisfy the voice, then we'll come back to speaking. Okay. One of the things that I thought was particularly interesting in the Byron Katie video was the interviewer was talking to her about waking up. And he said that, you know, we can all do the practice. And certainly as we do the practice, you know, layers of things fall away and we get happier. And he said, but it seemed, you know, he said something like, but, you know, people like you who have really woken up, something quantum happened, you know, something that was just grace. And the point he seemed to be making was that, I don't know exactly what point he was making. It sounded kind of like he thought that maybe, although we can work and work and work, you know, with spiritual practice, that ultimately it's not really overly valuable, that awakening doesn't come from it. And he turned that idea over to Katie. And Katie did not agree with that idea, which I found interesting. She agreed that, you know, for her, there was this quantum experience that we would call grace. But she did seem to imply that another way to awakening was through the work. Not only the work, the official the work that she leads people through, but through the different spiritual practice. She thought inquiry, some type of inquiry, was the most important spiritual practice. But she did think that by completely going into inquiry and by inquiring into every belief and at every thought, that could lead the mind to die, or what we would call the ego death, and lead to awakening. So, I just thought that was an interesting point because, because it's an ongoing controversy, I guess, because I've seen it over the years about is spiritual practice really worth anything, and at least from her point of view, it is. Sometimes people have commented to me about my spiritual practice and why don't I just stop? Because, they're of the opinion that spiritual practice doesn't really do anything. And I guess the real answer for me is the honest answer about why I do spiritual practice is because my heart calls me to. By doing the spiritual practice, I'm really doing what I love. I'm not forcing myself into some kind of a pattern that I think I have to do, that I don't want to do. I'm really doing something that I love. And Katie did say later in the interview, in the same interview, something about grace is what enables you to do the work. So, for example, even though I appear to spend, maybe hours in contemplation every day, it's grace that calls me to love sitting in that chair and doing contemplation every day. So the impression I got from Katie was that grace works in more than one way. And to think that grace always looks like a spontaneous awakening like she experienced, or to think that grace always has to happen through, A Course in Miracles forgiveness, or through awareness watching awareness, or through, inquiry, or to think grace always has to happen a certain way, that's probably the error. Whatever process our heart leads us through, whether it's a quantum spontaneous awakening, or whether it's, sitting in the chair every morning in contemplation and then staying with that contemplation throughout the day, through a mantra or some other type of remembrance as we move about, or whether it's being able to sit for hours in awareness, watching awareness, whatever it is that we're doing, it's grace that enables us to do that. And probably what we don't want to do, and now I'm not speaking from what I heard from Katie, I'm speaking from Regina Dawn Akers. Probably what we don't want to do is feel guilty about whatever seems to be natural for us. So, for example, if contemplation is very, very natural for me, and I can spend hours in contemplation, but then awareness watching awareness is not as natural for me. I don't seem to even understand, for example, what Michael Langford is talking about when he says awareness watching awareness. That's not anything that I should beat up on myself about if that's my situation. So I have a question that fits very well with this discussion. Oh, no, it's guilt. Oh, no, the first question was grace. Okay, sorry. How do you define grace? That's a damn good question, Joseph in Vermont. How do you define grace? The problem is defining. I'm going to say that grace is something that happens naturally. That's the best I can do. It happens naturally. So whether you have a spontaneous awakening, that happened naturally for you. If you are called into awareness, watching awareness, and you can sit there for 2, 3, 4 hours, that's happening naturally for you. Yes, effortless. That's grace. If it's contemplation and writing, and that's happening naturally for you, and that's grace. So I think my only point here is that grace does not need to always look one way. That was the feeling I got from Byron Katie. Grace may look like a spontaneous awakening, but grace may also seem to look like a phased awakening. Grace is leading you through those steps. By how you're naturally being guided, by how your heart is asking you to do it. One thing that if you've listened to my teachings often, one thing you may have heard me say before is don't copy me. And when I say don't copy me, that's because I have observed some people attempting to do exactly what I do, when I would say it's not their calling, it's not their grace, it's not natural for them to do whatever practice I'm doing in exactly the way I do it. And so they experience frustration, and so, follow grace, follow your heart, trust what's coming natural. For me, there is a bit of a push, a bit of a stretch. There may be a certain point that's natural, but then I feel guided for what I called the other day a stretch goal. But even that guidance for a stretch goal, a guidance to push myself a little further, that also actually feels guided, and I would say that comes through grace as well. So the Byron Katie interview was interesting, but for me, that particular point, which for me ends the controversy over to practice or not to practice, whether it's a practice or a spontaneous awakening, either way, it's happening through grace, and either way, it's perfect. I thought that was a wonderful answer, and I really appreciated Katie addressing it in that way. So if you want to see the interview, that's also on my Facebook page. Feel free to go and have a look. All right, enough chatting. Why don't we go into a little bit of silence, and then we'll get started with tonight's Seven Steps work. Amen. All right. So tonight we are going to be starting with quote number 399. And I'm going to post a link to 399 in my journal in the room for those of you who want to follow along in the journal. For those of you who are listening on the radio, in order to get to the journal, please go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then when you get to that blog, you will find a menu bar at the top. Click on step 2. And then after you click on step 2, click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your own way to 399. And 399 is where we are beginning. I'm going to start by reading number 399 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I am on page 74. This quote is coming from the Supreme Yoga, and here is the quote. When you have gained self-knowledge, of course that's capital S, self-knowledge, and when your consciousness has infinitely expanded, your mind no longer falls into the cesspool of this world. I'll read that quote from the Supreme Yoga one more time. When you have gained self-knowledge, and when your consciousness has infinitely expanded, your mind no longer falls into the cesspool of this world. So why don't we look at the journal for those of you who aren't familiar with the Seven Steps work. The journal is what I wrote after contemplating the quote that I just read to you. And so here is what I wrote. The reason the mind is attracted to the stories and problems of body, personality, and world is because of belief in body, personality, and world. Without belief, there could be no attraction or interest. Therefore, the purpose of inquiry or investigation is the death of belief. I see Joseph has one more question. So let me answer this one more question, Joseph. I asked too many questions, he says, and I know in a heartbeat I may be blocked from asking too many questions. So he has one more question to ask. Why do you teach by journal? Because that's what I feel to do. How's that for an answer? It's what my heart wants to do. In fact, I teach from this journal twice a week, because when I first started teaching from this journal once a week, that wasn't enough for me. I wanted to teach from this journal more. So I teach from it twice a week. So that's the answer. And the reason I was laughing when I read number 399 is because, as I mentioned, I watched the Katie video this morning, and you know, I hadn't seen the Katie video before, but if I had seen the Katie video just before writing this, you would have thought that I was copying her, because this is exactly what Katie was talking about this morning. You know, she called, people who are not awake, believers. That was her term. They're believers. They believe their thoughts. They believe, you know, their experiences. They are believers. And she talked about how what happened for her when she had her spontaneous awakening was that she quit believing. That's what happened. And she says that inquiry as a practice is the practice that can lead people to stop believing their thoughts, to cease to be a believer. So notice number 399 in the journal says, the reason the mind is attracted to the stories and problems of body, personality, and world is because of belief in body, personality, and world. Without belief, there could be no attraction or no interest. Therefore, the purpose of inquiry or investigation is the death of belief. And that's exactly what Katie said this morning in that video, that is the purpose of inquiry, to lead us to stop believing our thoughts. Now, right now, my life is a little bit up in the air. There are a couple major things that are changing, and yet exactly how they're changing has not yet been fully defined. And so you know how it is sometimes your life just gets kind of thrown up in the air, and if your mind is somewhat awake, you just have to wait for all the pieces to fall in place. Because the truth is, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, and people may ask what's going to happen, and the truth is you just don't know. So you just kind of have to wait. But what happens when your mind isn't somewhat awake and your life gets thrown up in the air is you keep trying to figure out what's going to happen. You keep worrying about what might happen. You try to manipulate things a certain way. Well, I don't do that anymore. So the fact that my life is thrown up in the air means that right now I'm waiting. That's what I'm doing. I'm waiting to see what happens. There's nothing else I really can do. However, last night, for some reason, I was woken up. The way I remembered is I was woken up by a thought, and the thought was about how my life is kind of in the air right now. And after that, it was followed by many, many, many other thoughts. And at an earlier time in my life, this probably would have been what I would have called an ego attack. This active mind thinking about what was going on with me. I would have been listening to it. I would have been believing it. I would have been, you know, probably fearful, and I would have called it an ego attack. What was really interesting about last night when this happened was that I did not believe it at all. I laid there completely relaxed with my eyes closed, knowing that at some point, whatever had caused this to be wound up, you know, wherever the ego was speaking, it was just going to unwind itself and I would fall asleep. And there was not an ounce of believing, not an ounce. It was rather amazing. And in fact, this morning I was talking on the phone with Nikki Dobson from Costa Rica. She's down there with Diedrich right now. And she was asking me how I felt, what my opinion was about these changes in my life and what may or may not happen. And I said, you know, I don't have an opinion. I said, I can tell you what the ego said, you know, and I told her a few of the thoughts I'd seen during the night. And what was interesting is the thoughts contradicted each other. You know, like one thought would say, well, if X happens, that's good because blah, blah, blah. But then another thought would say, if X happens, that's bad because of blah, blah, blah. So it was typical ego. It was all over the place. But there wasn't an ounce of believing. There wasn't an ounce of me in those thoughts. The thoughts were happening. I was watching them. I was just resting with my eyes closed, knowing they would end. But there wasn't an ounce of me in those thoughts. And so to say that I have an opinion about what's going to happen is not true. I don't have an opinion. I'm waiting. That's all I can do. And of course, I trust that whatever happens, however this plays out, that's what's supposed to be, you know? So it really is what Katie was talking about this morning, that the problem is being the believer. The problem is believing those thoughts. That's what causes us to suffer. And believing those thoughts keeps us listening to those thoughts. See, I knew the thoughts would pass because I wasn't really giving them my attention. I knew that whatever this was, whatever these had started, I can't explain that, but I knew that it was temporary, that they would pass, and that they would not affect me. I knew they would not affect me. They weren't affecting me then, and they wouldn't affect me at any point. That I was not changed by these thoughts. The only difference is believing or not believing them. And I would say that my non-believing last night did come from inquiry. Not really inquiry last night, because last night I didn't have to practice inquiry on the thoughts. But at previous times when thoughts were coming that were upsetting me, I would use inquiry. I did not use Katie's work, although Katie's work is wonderful and is perfect. But I used more the Ramana Maharshi style, actually the teachings of Inner Ramana style of inquiry, where I basically asked, you know, who is thinking these thoughts, right? And I saw quickly that it was just the mind. And then I would begin to ask, who am I? And I would see that what I am is not the mind. And I would see that I am not affected by these thoughts. And by this type of inquiry, you could say a separation happened. You know, we usually associate separation with the ego, but actually there's another type of separation that is healing. A separation happens between the false and the true. That separation is healing. So I came to see that those thoughts were not true, not about who I am. They were just story. And I came to see who I am, constant, right, unaffected. And this is why if these thoughts do happen, they can happen now and they don't upset me. The believing has stopped. All right, Joseph in Vermont, you said you have another question. I will take your question and I'll have a sip of tea while I wait for it to come. And is there a question still coming? I'm enjoying the silence. Tell you what, I can't tell if there's a question still coming or not. So why don't we read 399 one more time? Oh, wait, here's the question. do you control your thoughts or do your thoughts control you? If you're talking about me specifically, I would say neither. I would say neither. But for some people, the thoughts seem to control them. And the reason the thoughts seem to control them is simply because they believe them. Once we do not believe the thoughts, they do not control us. And we don't control the thoughts. I know, you know, thoughts come into the mind. They appear. You could say they're a part of the script of the world, and I call them character lines. They come into the character's mind. And if you believe you are the character, then you will believe the thoughts and they will control you as the character because you're acting out as the character. If you do not believe you are the character, the thoughts come into the mind, but they're meaningless. And of course, if you look at the first few workbook lessons in A Course in Miracles, you'll see that that's Jesus' first focus in the workbook, is teaching that those thoughts are meaningless. And once they are meaningless, you do not control them. And Joseph's next question is, so where does truth begin? Truth has no beginning. Truth is the isness that always is, without beginning, without end. And you recognize truth when you recognize who you are. And with that said, I'm going to go back to number 399. The reason the mind is attracted to the stories and problems of body, personality, and world is because of belief in body, personality, and world. Without belief, there could be no attraction or no interest. So this is what I was just speaking about in answering Joseph's questions, right? If I am not believing the thoughts in my mind, there's no attraction to those thoughts. There's no interest in those thoughts. They are literally meaningless. They can still show up, but they have no effect. And this was my experience last night. They were there. The mind was active. I don't know why, but it had no effect. It passed. So without belief, there could be no attraction or interest to the thoughts that appear. Therefore, the purpose of inquiry or investigation is the death of belief. That's what inquiry is after. The death of belief. Because when you're no longer a believer, as Katie would say, then those thoughts are now meaningless, as Jesus says in A Course in Miracles. All right? So why don't we scroll down and click on number 400. Just in case you weren't already in 399, I will post a link to 400 in the room. And I see that Joseph has been red dotted now, Joseph, so now you get to listen without the questioning mind. So, you know, that's just another gift. I'm glad you got a few questions in there first, but now it's a gift to be able to just listen without thinking of questions at the same time. Yeah, so we're going to read number 400. There is no way other than self-knowledge. I'm reading from the Seven Steps to Awakening. There is no way other than self-knowledge for the cutting asunder of bondage and for crossing this ocean of illusion. Again, there is no way other than self-knowledge for the cutting asunder of bondage and for crossing this ocean of illusion. Right? Let's look at number 400 in the journal. It is not foolish to follow the heart's call and seek for self-knowing, realization, and awakening. It is natural to follow this path. What is not natural is to remain ignorant of self and suffer from deluded ideas and manifestations. Again, we have a divine coincidence going on here, which it just shows that everything is done by something other than the person. As I mentioned, I watched the Byron Katie video posted on my page by Lisa Hansen. And as I mentioned before I even started speaking tonight, one of the things that interested me the most about the Katie discussion was the discussion on grace. And is practice really a part of grace? And Katie seemed to imply before the interview was over that if you are called to practice, that is the way grace is calling you, that it's grace that gives you the ability to practice. Now, I have seen, as I mentioned at the beginning, many discussions, especially in the last couple years, of what I call to practice or not to practice. And there are certainly people, I will call it a school of thought, although it's not actually a school, but it's like a group of people who seem to think that spontaneous awakening, like Katie experienced, is the only way awakening happens. And that if your spontaneous awakening hasn't happened, then you are asleep, and your spiritual practice is just something the sleeping character is doing. And it really has no purpose, and there's no reason to practice. And, I have heard this point of view given, many, many times. My heart has always led me to practice. And I have always known that the wise thing to do is for me to follow my heart. It is never, ever, ever wise for me to listen to someone else above my own heart. The only time I would listen to someone else is when what they say gets an inner confirmation from my heart. Like right now you see Deb saying yes, yes, yes. Well, she's listening to me, right? She's listening to what I'm saying, and she's writing yes, yes, yes. Where is that coming from? That's coming from her, right? As Barb D. has written, it resonates. So if Deb goes off now, and even if Deb says, Regina said, yada, yada, yada. Regina said she to practice if your heart tells you to practice. Even if she uses those words, she's not really saying, Regina said. What she's saying is, my heart says. Maybe Regina expressed the words, but her heart said yes, yes, yes. Her heart said yes, always listen to heart above another. So the only time I listen to, quote, an other is when the heart tells me to, right? If someone is saying something and my heart is not confirming that, my heart is giving me a no, I do not listen to that person. And this is my recommendation for everyone. So when people have been saying to me, it's happened several times in the last couple of years, just because it's kind of a popular thing right now, to say, practice does nothing. When people have said to me that, practice is just something that happens in the illusion, it does nothing, there's no sense in practicing, you'll wake up when you wake up, I never had a confirmation on that. My guidance has always been to practice, and my guidance has also always been to put myself into my practice as much as I can. My guidance has also been not to judge myself when I don't, right? Not to judge myself when I don't, but to put myself into my practice as much as I can. And, as I mentioned at the beginning of this hour, Katie was saying that is another way that grace operates. Grace gives you the ability and the calling to practice. So number 400 says, it is not foolish to follow the heart's call and seek for self-knowing, realization, and awakening in whatever way you're called to do that. It is natural to follow this path in whatever way you're called to do that, right? That's how grace works too. What is not natural is to remain ignorant of self and suffer from deluded ideas and manifestations. That's not natural. It's not natural to stay a believer and suffer. So if your heart is guiding you away from that believing through inquiry, through A Course in Miracles workbook, through Seven Steps to Awakening, through awareness watching awareness, through whatever, what's natural is to follow your heart that's leading you away from that ignorance and suffering. That makes a whole lot more sense. Now I want to tell you about a dream I had in October. This dream happened, I can't remember if I've ever talked about this dream in Pal Talk. I remember I shared it with some people in the Awakening Together group in Facebook, but I don't know if I've talked about it in Pal Talk, so this might be new. It might be a review. I don't know. But while I was at the Abbey, first of all, I need to tell you that the Abbey in Canyon City is certified haunted. By certified, it means that these people who study the paranormal came in there and they used electronic equipment to take readings. And I think twice they've been there. And twice they have had readings on their electronic equipment, which, quote, proves that it's haunted. Okay, I knew this. I mean, I've had a tour. I've been in the parts of the Abbey where the public is not allowed. I've been everywhere in the Abbey. They were kind enough to give me a tour there. So I've been where the public is not allowed, and I knew about the supposed ghosts. Well, while I was sleeping at the Abbey in October, hold on, taking a drink. On my first night sleeping at the Abbey, I had this experience. I may have told the story. I kind of remember telling it. I had this experience. I was in my room, laying in my bed, sleeping, and I was woke up by the sound of running water in my room. And at first, I didn't really know what the sound was, but then I realized right by my bed, there was a pipe that came out of the wall, but it didn't have like a faucet or anything in the end of it. It was just an open pipe, and water was coming in through that pipe and flooding onto the floor of the room I was in. And the thought that crossed my mind, and of course, well, I won't go into any explanations. I'll just tell the story. The thought that crossed my mind was this had something to do with the ghosts. In fact, you know, that I really needed to leave the room now because the room was going to be flooded and I needed to leave the room now. And so I tried to get up from bed and I couldn't. I could not. It's like my body was a smaller magnet and the bed was a larger magnet and I was attached to the bed. I could not get up. I could not take the blankets off. I could not set up, and I could hear the water pouring into the room next to the bed. And the thought then came into my mind that the ghosts wanted to kill me. Now, the interesting thing was I was not at all fearful. I just knew I really needed to continue to try to get out of the room. Like this was not something I could give up. I couldn't stop trying. So there was like I would call it a patient persistence. There was no fear, no panic. There was just continually trying to get up and kind of even a thought that if I kept trying, I would eventually be able to get up. You know, you might call that faith or something. And so I just kept trying to get up. And then what happened, I was looking at the window, and the window had these floral curtains on it. And I'm looking at the window, and all of a sudden there's this flash of light, and the water sound stops. And then I'm able to set up. The experience stopped. I looked down next to the bed, and there was no pipe. And the floor was completely dry. It hadn't happened. And although, I confess, I did not have the experience of waking up from a dream, I assumed that I had been asleep and that I had woken up from a dream. I have no other explanation. You know, there's no pipe. There was no wet floor. The entire experience was over. What was interesting after the flash is that I was still looking right straight at the curtains. Nothing in the room changed other than the water stopping and that I was able to set up. I really didn't know what to make of this experience. I didn't have any other experiences while staying at the Abbey other than pure, you know, bliss, joy, love the silence. I was there on a silent retreat. Beauty, the nature was beauty. The weather was perfect. It was magnificent. After I returned home from the silent retreat, one morning while I was in my seven steps contemplation, I don't remember which quote I was on, but in the contemplation, as a part of the contemplation, the memory of this dream experience came back. And it was immediately interpreted for me. Like the interpretation kind of just like dropped into my mind. And what I understood was that in the dream, when I thought that I needed to get out of the room or else I was going to die eventually, you know, and I was persistently and patiently trying to get up, That was in the dream. There was no water pouring into the room. There were no ghosts or entities that wanted to kill me. The whole thing was untrue. Yet, my patient persistence in that practice, that unreal practice of trying to get out of bed, somehow led to the, I'm going to call it the volume of will, the buildup of will within me that led to the flash and the awakening and the ability to see that there never was water flooding into the room. There never were ghosts trying to kill me, right? And the way this was interpreted for me was this was akin to spiritual practice. When we think that we are the person to some degree, and we are doing a spiritual practice, whether it's awareness, watching awareness, contemplation, A Course in Miracles workbook, self-inquiry, that's in the dream. And we may even feel I felt like I was making no progress, really. Remember when I was laying in bed, it's like I was a magnet attached to the bed and I couldn't sit up. We may even feel like we're making no progress. The progress itself is unimportant. What's important is the patient persistence, the buildup of will. And that patient persistence, that buildup of will, is what led to the awakening. And that does matter. And in fact, after this was interpreted for me this way, I remembered it actually says that in NTI Luke. And in fact, I think Barb or somebody commented on that too when I posted this in the Awakening group, that in NTI Luke, it says that it's not our practice that wakes us up. It's our willingness. But it's because of our willingness that we're practicing. And as we appear to practice more and more and more, for example, if I am doing awareness, watching awareness, and my practice extends from half an hour a day to 2 hours a day to 4 hours a day to 8 hours a day, what is that a symbol of? That's a symbol of my willingness. I'm willing now to sit here only with this focus rather than, you know, doing all these other things that used to interest me. I don't have other interests anymore. I'm only interested in awakening now. It's a symbol. Our practice is a symbol of our willingness. But it's our willingness that leads to the awakening, to the flash. And in that dream experience, after the flash, all that was left, you could say, is what was apparently true, right? I was still in the same room, but there was no pipe, there was no water, there was no flood. Everything false disappeared. Well, that's what happens when we awaken. Only what is real, what is true, is present, is something that we know. Everything that was not real immediately ceases to exist for us. It's no longer there. So the moral of the story is, if we are guided to practice, if it's our heart guiding us into some practice and we follow that practice, and if our heart is guiding us to stretch goals, to try practicing more frequently or some kind of a deeper practice or something like that, and we're following our heart, it's not the practice itself that actually awakens us. So we don't need to judge ourselves on how, quote, perfect we get the practice. We do our best. What awakens us, or what leads to that final experience of awakening, is the willingness, the volume of willingness, or the buildup of willingness, as we become less attached to wanting to be this person and wanting to be in this dream. And something shifts in us to where there's more and more and more, and finally a total willingness to awaken, the awakening occurs. Right? So number 400 again. It is not foolish to follow the heart's call and seek for self-knowing, realization, and awakening. It is natural to follow this path. What is not natural is to remain ignorant of self and suffer from deluded ideas and manifestations. So if one of the ways that grace works in you is by calling you to a spiritual practice, go ahead and follow that practice. And if other people tell you that you are just a dream character practicing in a dream and it has no effect, remember my dream from the Abbey. I was a dream character practicing in a dream, and yet I'm told from inner wisdom, from what we call Holy Spirit, that it did have an effect. That my patient persistence is what led to the awakening from that dream. So follow your heart. Follow your guidance. Don't ever listen to anyone else above your own guidance. And maybe you're the only one doing it your way. You know what? That's perfect. Katie was the only one that did it her way. And one of the things she comments on is how Eckhart totally commented on that at dinner, how he says she took the hard way or something like that. But she's the only one that did it her way. And so maybe you're going to be the only one that does it your way. That's fine. Don't follow the crowd. Follow your heart. All right, I'm moving to 401. You can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and go to 401 yourself. I'm also going to put a link in the room. And I'm going to read number 401 from the Seven Steps to Awakening first. This is it. The Supreme Self has no relationship with this world appearance. Again, the Supreme Self has no relationship with this world appearance. All right, let's see how that turned out in my journal, number 401. Why follow the heart's call into awakening? When the self who feels called cannot awaken, and all this self knows does not exist there. The only answer is that the call itself is so penetrating, it cannot not be followed. Like gravity calls a falling object down to earth, this call calls and must be followed. So again, one thing that at some point we all realize is that the I who is practicing, right, the I who meditates, the I who does inquiry, the I who does the Course in Miracles workbook, that I ain't never going to awaken, baby. It ain't never going to happen. And at some point, that inner realization comes that that's not even who I am, and that that's the dream I'm waking up from, that I am that person. And so, you know, you could ask, well, if I, you know, Regina, am not going to ever wake up, why should I do this? I mean, I don't even know what the heck this awakening experience is going to be. I mean, you know, it kind of reminds me of in Peaceful Warrior when Dan Millman is up on top of the clock tower struggling with his ego, and his ego looks like his own body outside of him. So you see two Dan Millmans struggling, but one is his ego. And he's trying to throw his ego off of the clock tower. And his ego says to him, "Do you know who you are without me?" And the answer Dan Millman gives is, "No, we don't know." And then he drops him anyway, right? And I think if you watch the elevator scene in Revolver, I think you hear the same kind of thing coming from the ego. I think he tells Jake, "You don't even know who you are without me," or something like that. So there's a little T truth to that. You know, at this point in the dream, identified with this personality as who I am, I don't know who I am without this. This seems to be who I am. Regina, the girl who loves hiking and went hiking today and had a great time, you know? So if I'm not Regina, the girl who loves hiking, who am I? And I love hiking. And in that way, I kind of like Regina. I like the fact that she likes to hike. Am I even sure I want to let go of her? You know, these questions can come into the mind. And of course, these types of doubts, they're coming from ego. Remember, it was ego that was saying on the clock tower, "Do you know who you are without me?" It's ego that says, "Do you know who you are without me?" That's what he said to Jake in the elevator, right? So when these thoughts come up, well, I don't even know who I am without this personality. Am I really sure I want to be without this personality? That's ego. So why follow the heart's call into awakening when the self who feels called cannot awaken and all this self knows does not exist there? You know, there's no people. There's no people in awakening. There's no mountains to climb, no world in awakening, right? There's only the self, we're told. Why go for that? I enjoyed my day hiking with people in the mountains today. Well, the answer is, if we are being called, if this is how grace is attracting us, the truth is we can't help but go. That's the real answer. And if you surrender to that, realizing I don't know where grace is taking me, I don't know who I am without this ego personality, I don't know what isness is without a world, I don't know what it means to say all there is self, I don't know any of that, and yet I feel so called. I can't help but follow. That's the answer. You could say the answer is it's your time. So why fight it? Why not just allow it to pull you? And if you feel yourself surrender into that, at least in my case, I can feel my heart just opening. Like I don't have to know, quote, where I'm going. I don't have to know what this journey's end looks like. I only know the love of following. I only know the love of answering the call. And that is enough. It's kind of like Joseph asked me earlier in the teaching, you know, why do you teach from your journal? I don't know. Because that's what I feel to do. And in fact, teaching once a week from the journal wasn't enough. I felt really I needed to teach twice a week. You know, I'm just following the love of the call. It's simple. So why follow the heart's call into awakening when the self who feels called cannot awaken and all this self knows does not exist there? The only answer is that the call itself is so penetrating it cannot not be followed. Like gravity calls a falling object down to earth, this call calls and must be followed. I'm helpless in its pull. Right? That's the answer. I'm helpless against it. So why fight it? Why not just go? All right. Let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 402. And there's a link in the room for those of you who need a link. First, I will read number 402 from The Seven Steps to Awakening. The ignorant person accepts as real whatever he sees in this world. Not so the wise one. Again, that sounds just like Katie in that video on my Facebook page. That's exactly how she was speaking this morning. The ignorant person accepts as real whatever he sees in this world. Not so the wise one. Even as a piece of wood and water in which it is reflected have no real relationship, the body and the self have no real relationship. So just as a piece of wood that's reflected in water, there's not a relationship between the reflection of the wood and the piece of wood, right? They're not the same material, right? Just as there's no relationship there, there's no relationship between the body and the self. So why don't we go to the journal, number 402. Number 402 says, what relationship does constancy have to change? Through observation, it is easy to see there is no connection between constancy and change, and therefore there is no relationship. Change changes with no effect on constancy. One focused on the body, world, and change believes them to be true. One focused on constancy knows that which is true. As there is no relationship between the true and untrue, and the lack of relationship itself points to truth. So, one of the things, you know, there's a few things that have been most helpful, but one of the things that has been most helpful to me is the separation, using separation for the purpose of awakening, the separation of that which is constant and which is me, I, the self. The separation of that which is constant and that which changes, that I thought was me. You know, like the body, right? The body went from baby to child to teenager to adult, and now it's beginning to age. Right? The body has had healthy times, it's had unhealthy times. It's had fatter days and thinner days. Right? Sometimes it feels pain, sometimes there's no pain. The body changes all the time. But there is this self. I'm still going to call it an I, although it's not the I thought. There is this self, this I, this me, this present self that was there when I was a child. It was there when I was a teenager. It was there when I was a young woman, and it's here now when I'm 52 years old. It has been there on sick days. It has been there on healthy days. It has been there when the body felt pain. It has been there when the body did not feel pain. It has been there when I felt mental emotion of sadness or fear. It was there when I felt emotion of happiness or peace. It was there when I felt clarity with Holy Spirit. It was there when I felt confusion, ego attack. I have always been there. Something has always been there that has not changed at all, in spite of all of these other changes, physical changes and mental changes and emotional changes. But this presence was always there. And what's happened for me is by separating that which appears to be me, but it changes. So we're talking about the physical, the mental, the emotional, right? That which appears to be me that, you know, before I would have always called me, but it changes. And then that which is also always there, but has never, ever changed or never, ever been affected. By separating those two, it's becoming more clear to me what the true self is. I am that which is constant. I'm that which is always here, always present. The other things, the emotional states, the physical states, the mental states, you know, I've mentioned before, like at one point in my life, I was a Republican. At another point in my life, I was a Democrat. My whole beliefs changed. But I, that self, that here-ness, that isness is my favorite word, has always been present without change. That's what I am. And as I become more and more aware of that as what I am, the changing little s self then has less and less meaning. That's why last night all of these thoughts could have come into the mind talking about, you know, what might happen that's good in my life or what might happen that's bad in my life as my life is now going through this transition period. And I did not listen to any of it. I did not listen to the ideas, oh, that would be good. And I did not listen to the ideas, oh, that would be bad. Because I've separated that changing state, which appears to be the self, from that which I am. There's no relationship between constancy and change. Change changes and changes and changes again, and constancy is always the same. And by noticing that, you become aware that you are the constancy. And this is where the peace of God, or the peace that passeth understanding, comes from. Because then you no longer believe that you shift and change with change. You know who you are. So what relationship does constancy have to change? Through observation, it is easy to see. There is no connection between constancy and change, and therefore, there is no relationship. Change changes with no effect on constancy. One focused on the body, world, and change believes them to be true. One focused on constancy knows that which is true. difference between belief and knowledge. As there is no relationship, as there is no relationship between the true and the untrue, and the lack of relationship itself, the fact that change can change without touching the constancy, that lack of relationship itself points to truth. We see who we are. I'm that which is always here and unaffected. All right, it is time for me to go. So I will be back tomorrow at 1:30 Eastern time to continue starting with number 403. You guys have a great evening. Bye-bye.